It's a big campaign issue this season, the refugee crisis. Just ahead, a closer look at the effect here in Northeast Florida. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, this week, Jacksonville University hosts a panel discussion on the refugee crisis and its impact on the First Coast. We'll have a preview as we take your calls. It's 549-2937 to join us. Then later, October marks Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Hear about the latest treatments being put forth to combat it at Jacksonville's Mayo Clinic, plus The Spectator with a look at some ideas for your weekend. All of that and more ahead. But first this hour, still lots of talk this morning about last night's final presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Lots of issues were discussed on that very contentious debate stage, but one hot topic that didn't get as much attention this time around was the global refugee crisis, a very divisive issue on the campaign trail. How and whether to admit refugees that some leaders and Americans believe could be a threat to public safety in this country. A panel discussion on the refugee crisis is coming up this weekend at Jacksonville University. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Dr. Leslie Kaplan, Associate Director of the Honors Program at UNF. Good morning.
Hicks Honors College.
Oh, okay, good morning. Good to see you, Dr. Kaplan.
It's actually the Hicks Honors College. We just celebrated our one-year anniversary as a college last weekend.
Excellent. Also with us, Travis Trice, Church Engagement Director from Jacksonville's own World Relief Program.
Good morning. Thank you.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about the debate over admitting refugees to this country, particularly refugees from Syria and other Middle Eastern nations? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us or weigh in on our Facebook page. In a moment, Dr. Kaplan, we'll talk about this weekend's event on the JU campus. But first, let me ask you, even though the issue of refugees did not come up at last night's debate, all through this campaign season, it's been a point of contention as the candidates vie for votes with Donald Trump calling for extreme vetting of refugees and calling earlier in the campaign season for a total ban on Muslim immigration or allowing anyone of a Muslim background to be admitted to this country. In that political context, how will this discussion be aired on Sunday on JU's campus, given that it has become a quite divisive issue this presidential election year? Dr. Kaplan.
I think probably what we're going to do is start by we have a great panel. We have Mike Baird from the UN Association. Travis will be there from World Relief. We have a professor of economics from Flagler. We have some people who arrived here as refugees, and I'm a professor at the University of North Florida. I think probably what we're going to do is we're going to start talking about some of the misconceptions that people have. There's a lot of misinformation out there.
And let's talk about that. What are some of the most common perceptions people hold about refugees that you feel are inaccurate?
One of them is what we've been hearing about through the campaign, this question of vetting. Whenever I hear those complaints about the system, I just can't believe that people don't understand. The first thing is that we have an ocean dividing us between us and the refugees. People cannot take a boat the way they are into Europe. So we're never going to have what they're having in Europe. You need a visa to get in the United States. There are only 36 countries in the world that you do not need, that you can get a visa at the immigration gate at an airplane. And so everywhere else, you have to get a visa. And so in order to get that visa, if you're a refugee, you need to have gone through this incredible vetting process that takes most of the time about 2 years. And it includes background checks, multiple background checks, biometrics. They're vetted by the UN, by the United States Department of State, the Department of Defense, the National Counterterrorism Center, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Departments of Homeland Security, and the Department of State. And and only 1% of all refugees who are declared refugees by the UN ever get resettled in any country. And the U.S. is only one of many countries. So the idea that that would be a place that would be interesting or useful as a way to get into the United States just seems to me to be ludicrous.
It's 549-2937, and we'll go to your calls in a moment as we look at how the refugee crisis is impacting Florida. Travis Trice, you're with World Relief here in Jacksonville, celebrating 25 years of resettling refugees here on the First Coast. You work with refugees intimately. And so when we talk about the impact of refugees on the local economy in particular, I know that's going to come up at this event Sunday. What's been your experience at World Relief?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking that question. That's a good question. Our refugees, you know, a lot of people think that they go on to, you know, these long-term government programs where they're given, you know, entitlements and whatnot. But the truth is they're given very short-term benefits, such as food stamps and Medicaid that lasts for a very finite period of time, many times just, you know, less than a year. And they are expected within 90 days, actually, to become self-sufficient. That means they need to find employment. Most of the time, more often than not, that means 2 to 3 jobs. They take what they can get. And I think it's also important to understand that, you know, when you're identifying who a refugee is, a lot of people assume that means a low-skilled worker. But a refugee can be a doctorate holder, or it can be someone from an urban, you know, community, or someone from, you know, as from a farming community. So it's a very vast range of people groups, but what they all have in common is that they've been forced. Now, they didn't choose to leave. They were forced to leave their own country. So we get a lot of doctors, lawyers, engineers, architects who come through with high-level skills. And while they may not be able to get that job right away, what we like to do is pair them with volunteers from the Jacksonville area who have experience in those fields of work so they can find out what degrees do I need to get, what kind of experience or education do I need to get in order to get back into the field that I specialized in.
Amy Stalker is with us now. You represent the Jacksonville UN Association. You'll also be on hand Sunday on the JU campus. This year in particular, there's been a lot of hue and cry over refugees from Syria as people fleeing the violence there seek shelter in Europe, and a few have come here to America. The refugee crisis isn't just limited to Syria, though.
No.
Correct?
Right, correct. We're getting refugees from Congo. We have in the past Uganda. I think Travis will know better where exactly where they're coming from right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the number one people group is actually Burma. For Jacksonville. Last year, Syrians made up 2% of our arrivals.
How many Syrians have resettled in our area?
Fiscal year to date, about 20 families.
20 families.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dr. Kaplan, what would you say to those listening who think that's 20 families too many?
Meet them.
Yeah.
Meet them. They're wonderful people. They're families. People. Another misconception is that we're getting young men, and we're not. We're 77% of all the people who are declared refugees and who come to the U.S. are women and children. Meet them. They're wonderful people.
Now, let's talk a little bit, too, Amy, about some of the other topics that will come up Sunday. This is an opportunity for people to hear about the UN's involvement in refugees.
Right.
And you're the local spokesperson for that.
Yeah, association. So the UN has a whole branch, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. And the United Nations also has 17 Sustainable Development Goals. And this falls under two of them, reduced inequalities, and then also peace, justice, and strong institutions. So we advocate for all the United Nations goals.
Lots of calls. Meanwhile, it didn't come up at last night's debate between Trump and Clinton as it has in other conversations this election year. But we're talking right now about the refugee crisis. A preview of this weekend's panel discussion on the JU campus brought to us by the UN Association of the USA here in Jacksonville. What are your questions? It's 549-2937 to join the show this morning. Jay is on the line all the way from Tampa. Hi, Jay. Good morning.
Good morning. The refugees in the crisis or in the context of this election is really being used as a red herring and a way to just inject Islamophobia and blame brown people and people of a different religion for problems that we have right here. If there is a concern about a threat to American safety, those concerns are internal. They just foiled a plot of some right-wing nationalists who are going to bomb a Somali community a mosque. So, I mean, if people are worried about terrorism, that's an internal thing. These people need help, and we can help them. And the number of people we want to bring in is infinitesimally small. And we should be helping these people, period.
Jay, thanks for the call. Travis, that, of course, is the position of World Relief. But as we've seen this year, there is certainly, when you look at the issue of Islamic extremism and those who fear that the vetting process for admitting refugees from Muslim-majority countries is not sufficient to protect civilians in this country, what would you say to those who hold those fears and hold those beliefs?
I would say this nation should be proud that we've resettled over 3 million refugees over the years. And I understand that we've had, you know, maybe two or three cases of refugees who have been investigated or, you know, or seen to radicalize here in the United States. But we've had zero attacks on U.S. soil out of over 3 million.
From refugees
who've come, through the refugee program. And that's why I'm glad we have the United Nations, you know, talking about this, because this is really the front and the back of the refugee process. There's a lot in the middle. That's where the vetting takes place. World Relief, we don't vet. We're actually, you know, once they've been authorized to come to the United States, we're the resettlement agency. But the United Nations, the UNHCR is on the front lines of that.
In fact, you think of Angelina Jolie being part of the UN High Commission on Refugees. That's probably one way the casual observer might have even heard about this program, Amy Stalker, but it certainly has many participants who aren't celebrities.
Yes. So I got to meet Shelley Pitterman, who's the U.S. representative to the UNHCR. That was amazing. He does a lot of work all around, you know, the world and advocating for our refugees here in the U.S. The other thing I want to say is that the refugees go through, I think it's five different levels
of vetting.
Screening, yeah, where they screen
them. What are the
levels?
Tell us about that. What are the levels?
Travis.
Yeah. Well, it starts with the UNHCR, you know, as was, I think Leslie stated earlier, you know, when someone flees their home country, they're first going to have to find a place of refuge that's usually a second country where they're not authorized to work. They're not really even authorized to be there technically. So that's why you see these camps be put up. That's usually the UNHCR who is there working in the camps. Now, this could be a mix of – this is where you get see the word migrant coming up, because it could be people joining the crowds of people. That's why we saw a terrible attack on Paris. But these are people that have not been vetted yet, that have not been screened. It's important to understand that we do all of our vetting in the United States overseas. So the State Department sends teams to the camps after the UNHCR has interviewed them thoroughly, done medical screenings on them, and then they've referred them to the State Department for resettlement. So not only are they having to be screened through the UNHCR, but there's a whole host of government entities that are screening them overseas before they even get a chance at resettlement. And I've heard people say that they will deny your application for resettlement just because they didn't have a good feeling of you. Everything could check out, and if they just have a bad feeling about you, you could be denied. So that's why less than one half of 1% of refugees in the world even get a chance at resettlement.
Alex in Jacksonville. Hi, Alex. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, go ahead, Alex.
Yes, I was just completely agreeing with everything that your panel says, and I guess my question for you would be, for my friends who are a little bit more on the xenophobic side, where can I get some facts and kind of put their mind at ease?
Dr. Kaplan.
There is so much information out there. I would go to the UN High Commissioner for Refugees website. The White House has information about refugees, particularly Syrian refugees. And you can also get information about Florida specifically from the Florida Department of Children and Families has a refugee services website, and all of those have great information.
549-2937, as we talk about the global refugee crisis on the show this morning. It's a preview of Sunday's panel discussion on this on the JU campus, brought to us by the United Nations Association of the USA, Jacksonville. Lance is in Palm Coast. Hi, Lance. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. While I want to preface this that I do have sympathy for the people that are going through, it's a bad way to say it, a bad time in their country. You know, I it's going to be taken badly by your panel, but I really don't care. We're having a bad time in our country. We have a huge debt. We have veterans that don't get care. We have all kinds of things that are going wrong in our house. And I think before we worry about the neighbor's house across the lake, we need to fix ours. We need to take care of our people. You know, I mean, we have right below us, we have a third world country, Mexico, where people make $5 a day, you know, that are trying to come to our country to better their lives. And we can't afford them. But we want to ship people over to this country that they're having a bad time. You know, I understand the vetting process is so much better, this, that, and the other thing, but really, it's only 20 families. Well, when is it too many? When is it, you know, we have problems in our country we need to take care of now and here. And you know what? I feel bad for Turkey, but you know, close the borders, give all the people that are leaving Syria a gun and turn them right back around and say, go fight for your country. Whether you fight for Assad or you fight with the rebels, go take your country back because we can't take you. We have enough problems of our own.
All right. Thanks, Lance. That's Lance in Palm Coast. And thanks for that call, Dr. Kaplan. Lance, I think, expressed sentiments that get to the divide in this country. People that fall more on his line of thinking, which is that let's focus on our domestic problems first, as opposed to people with a more globalist perspective. That really has become the great divider in this election, where you stand. What would you say to Lance?
I would say to Lance that I am in complete sympathy with what he's thinking about, that we absolutely have a lot of intractable problems in our own country as well. And what I would want to do is invite him and anybody else who feels that way, please, to get involved in whatever it is you care about. This is what I care about. There are a lot of other people who share this interest, but there are so many problems. And if we all got together and we all volunteered our time and we volunteered some of our money, we could make differences in all of these problems.
What attracted you to this issue?
What attracted me to this issue is that I am a professor at a university, and I was looking for an opportunity to give my freshman honors students both an experience where they could get that sense of how important it is and how rewarding it is to volunteer your time and work with a population that needs some assistance. And I also, I have a globalist perspective, and I would love to have my students all study abroad, but that's not economically possible for everybody. And I recognize that we have this incredible resource in Jacksonville, because you can walk into certain apartment complexes and then people's apartments, and it's like you're in another world. And so it gives my students an opportunity to experience another culture without having to buy a plane ticket, which is just an incredible experience for them.
A couple of tweets coming in from listeners from Paula. The people who are against the refugees should be reminded of the MS St. Louis. America, don't do what we did last time. Referring to the ship full of Jewish refugees in the 1930s, I think, that was sent back and died in the Holocaust. Here is another tweet from Catherine. Refugees should be welcomed with open arms, no matter where they're from or how they pray. Let's go to Rick in Green Cove Springs. Hi, Rick. Good morning. Thanks for calling. You're on the air, Rick.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. My comment is basically very similar to the last caller's, but my concern is that these people that come in, I'm not concerned about what country they come from, what religious background or beliefs they have. My concern is the wealth, adding to the welfare rolls, that they become here and maybe get on government assistance, and now we're supporting them again, or supporting them in one way or another, and we already have too many people in this situation.
All right, thanks, Rick. Travis.
Yeah, that's exactly why World Relief exists, and it's not just World Relief. There's, about a dozen resettlement agencies, IRC. Here in Jacksonville, though, there's Lutheran Social Services and Catholic Charities as well. And what our job is when these refugees come here, there's a lot of challenges. So I'm not denying that, you know, that we do have refugees who will have some public assistance for a very short amount of time. But when you're expected to learn a new culture, new language, you've just been through, in many cases, trauma. We have clients who have come through and they have unimaginable stories. And they're expected to become self-sufficient in 90 days. That means they need to be paying their own bills. They need to be, you know, have their kids enrolled in school. And there's just a lot of things going on at once. There's actually different phases that refugees go through. And what we like to do is to pair them with the community. So while I understand there's a lot of people that don't want to support them, you know, with their tax dollars or their time, you really don't have to. A lot of what we take is donated. A lot of the money we raise is fundraised. We are not 100% government funded by your tax dollars. We have churches, we have community groups that are going in and furnishing these new apartments. You know, if someone does lose a job, you know, we have benevolence set up that local churches are actually very much willing to pay and help float a refugee during a job transition or whatnot. But I also think it's important that when we talk about how welcome we want them to feel, these people are coming here, period. You know, we've been doing this in Jacksonville for 25 years, as you said. And when we look back at the, like around 1980, when the refugee program was new, we were accepting upwards of 200,000 a year. So we have a very rich history of refugee resettlement. And, you know, we're very, you know, in a, very much in a heated debate about 110,000 right now. But
the Syrian cohort.
Right.
Yeah.
And not all 110,000 from Syria.
Okay.
Once again, you know, this is from all over the world, many different countries. We had one gentleman that had been waiting for over 30 years to come to the United States. And so this is not a, you know, ship them all over at once process. It takes many years. But I would just say to the caller, you know, we're matching our refugees with volunteers, with churches who are, when I say sponsor, I mean they're befriending them. They're taking the time out of their day, every, you know, out of their weeks to go and visit these families, help them learn English. Teach them, you know, not just to go and we tell people don't pay for them. We want them to learn to stand on their own. Try not to buy them too many things because there's good books out there like When Helping Hurts and Toxic Charity. We're not here to, you know, to create dependence. We're here to foster independence by each family. And we really do that with the community. And we've got a lot of good volunteers that help us do that.
And some will be on hand Sunday. Amy Stocker, this is coming up Sunday at 2:30 p.m. on the JU campus in the Gooding Auditorium. And in addition to all the experts that we've been hearing talk this morning, you're also going to put on the stage some local refugees. Is that right?
Right. We'll have some local refugees that are going to talk and tell you about their story. And then also Dr. Arena Ahuja is going to be talking about how refugees actually add back to the economy.
What is Ahuja?
Ahuja, the professor from Flagler.
Oh, Dr. Rena Ahuja from Flagler College. And so that gives you a preview of this weekend's United Nations Association of the USA Jacksonville discussion dealing with the refugee crisis. This is at 2:30 on Sunday on the JU campus. Thanks so much for being here, Amy Stocker, Dr. Leslie Kaplan, and Travis Trice from World Relief. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Melissa.
Much more still ahead later. Some ideas for this beautiful fall weekend for you, including one that supports a hidden gem, the urban oasis of our own Jacksonville Arboretum. But up next, how Mayo Clinic is marking Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, with just weeks to go before the general election, candidates Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump face off in Las Vegas. Analysis of the third and final presidential debate.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJZT, your community, your world.
Hi, I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories.
A baby is wailing as feeding time approaches.
Growth in Northeast Florida has picked up recently.
Young, old,
every race. Everybody is here.
Plus music from our after-hours programming anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
It's a snapshot of today's classical scene. I'm Fred Child. Join me for highlights from recent concerts in Paris and Belgium and Brazil, from concert halls across the U.S., and day two with our young artist in residence, 16-year-old violinist Phoenix Avalon. On the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, survivor rates are increasing, and diagnosis and treatment is making leaps forward when it comes to breast cancer in this country. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and today in 2016, millions of women in the U.S. with a history of the disease are alive today. Even though breast cancer is the second leading cancer killer of women in this country after lung cancer, there is also good news to report. Dr. Sarah McLaughlin is a breast surgeon and director of the Jacoby Center for Breast Health at Mayo Clinic, and she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. And it's interesting to look at the trajectory of breast cancer in this country and survivor rates going up over the decades. Let's start with the good news. When you look at the treatment and survival rates for women.
Yeah, I mean, we're really seeing that this is improving. If you look long term, especially over the last 20 to 30 years, you're seeing that the death rates from breast cancer are declining. And that's probably a result of earlier screening. We've been more proactive in trying to identify things earlier, which makes them easier to treat. We've also made huge advances in terms of targeted medications to treat breast cancer in women who get it.
Let's talk about both of those, beginning with mammograms.
Sure.
Women still have a lot of, yeah, there is so much controversy over what age is best to begin mammography.
Yeah.
My mother died of breast cancer, so I agonized over this decision, and I decided to err on the side of going earlier rather than later. And I know that for each woman, it's an individual decision, but where does Mayo stand on that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, if you put everything together and you look at the U.S. Preventive Task Force Service, the American Cancer Society, many of your radiology societies, they all offer differing recommendations. Mayo's perspective really has been that the American Cancer Society has had for years, which has been the age of 40 is when you should receive your first mammogram, or 10 years before your first degree relative was diagnosed. So if your mom was diagnosed at 45, we would generally recommend 35. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, the controversy really stems from the fact that maybe we are promoting too much anxiety. When you screen, there's a possibility of false positives, meaning that you find something that isn't a breast cancer but needs additional workup to be performed about it. Mm-hmm. And the question is, does that create a lot of unnecessary anxiety for women? Does it really find cancers that are necessarily going to translate into something that they would ultimately die from? And so that's the challenge. And of course, you never know. Now, that being said, I think most of the time when that controversy has been studied, what usually comes out of it is that women almost uniformly say, yeah, but you know what? I would rather know.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather know. And so, yes, it was anxious. I was anxious those couple of days surrounding having to go back and have those extra tests. But in the end, I would rather know.
Right. And the other part of your comment a moment ago had to do with more targeted treatment options, advances that your specialty has really celebrated in the last couple of decades. Bring us up to date on where Mayo is with finding success in treatments like immunotherapy, for example, and other modalities that are really helping more women.
Yeah, I think the exciting thing is that we take targeted interventions and we think about that as most commonly being medications. And absolutely, we are identifying gene targets within cancers that are specific. Because honestly, when you come to the doctor and you have breast cancer and you want to be treated, you want to be treated for your cancer. You don't want to be treated based on, you know, 100 people that have breast cancer. You want to be specific to your cancer. So there's a lot of different tests looking at the genetic level of the tumor itself to try to figure out, do you even benefit from chemotherapy? If you do, what kind should you get? And are there other medications that we could use to treat you? I think that being said, we're also really trying to individualize many of the treatment strategies itself beyond just the medications. For example, what kind of surgery should you have? Everyone doesn't need to have axillary surgery to remove all of the lymph nodes. And maybe everyone doesn't need chemotherapy. Maybe everyone doesn't need radiation. You know, we try to individualize and integrate those approaches.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the end, the recognition is that breast cancer really is more of a systemic disease, if you will. So we have to treat that whole process as opposed to just one part.
You're also an expert on lymphedema. That's a side effect of breast cancer surgery that impacts 1 in 5 women.
Yeah. So as you said, we are increasing the number of women who are surviving breast cancer. These days, there's about 3 million women in the United States who have been treated for breast cancer and are still living. And one of the things that women worry about very frequently, if you poll them in that survivorship group, is lymphedema, which is a swelling that happens in the arm. You don't know who's going to get it, when they get it, or why they get it. And it's very difficult to predict and streamline that out.
It's 549-2937 as we mark Breast Cancer Awareness Month with Dr. Sarah McLaughlin, breast surgeon and director of the Jacoby Center for Breast Health at Mayo Clinic. Ira on the South Side. Hi, Ira. Good morning.
Thank you. I saw a CBS Sunday morning preview a few weeks ago that showed Mayo Rochester had some new cutting technology on dense breasts. Mammograms that provide early detection. Does that same technology exist at Mayo Jacksonville? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. So what you're referring to is molecular breast imaging. And essentially what that is it's what we would consider to be a functional screen of the breasts. Whereas a mammogram is looking at the architecture of the breast, the functional screens are looking at more of the blood flow and different uptake of molecular things in the breast itself. So it's very similar to how a mammogram is done in terms that it's 2 pictures per breast, but the data that is derived from that is perhaps a little bit more in depth. And it has been studied in the setting of dense breast tissue, which is very controversial across the United States, with many states having legislation regarding breast density and informing patients and those kinds of things. And Florida is not one of those at this point, but molecular breast imaging has been deemed to be an effective adjunct to mammogram screening itself. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone who comes in gets a molecular breast image study, but it's something that, again, is individualized based on breast density, based on family history, and those kinds of things.
Breast density, family history, genetics all play a role. And while it's so encouraging to see that treatment has improved so markedly, Doctor, when you look at the statistic that I think it's 1 in 8 women will be treated for breast cancer, and very often it's a woman with no risk factors, I think that's what makes this such a terrifying disease for women. This sense that it could happen to me, even if I live a completely healthy life and I have no risk factors.
Unfortunately, what I tell women is that getting breast cancer is certainly nothing that you did. Your biggest risk factors are unfortunately your age and being a woman. And that's right. And the fact is most women come into my office and they feel well. They feel well, and this is a shock, which is then trying to deal with all of that. You know, so much of what we do is in the office is trying to help these women figure out what's the best option for them.
Thanks for joining us. Always good information.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Sarah McLaughlin is a breast surgeon and director of the Jacoby Center for Breast Health at Jacksonville's own Mayo Clinic. And in a moment, a look at weekend events. Plus, we explore a hidden gem in the city, the Jacksonville Arboretum and Gardens. From the panhandle to the peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard.
On the next Fresh Air, Charlie Brooker, the creator and primary writer of Black Mirror, the British TV series inspired by dystopian sci-fi shows like The Twilight Zone, but set in the digital era.
Pick a target.
Oh my God.
Two. post their name and photo with hashtag Death2.
Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Beyond the stump speeches and the latest headlines,
everything she touches has turned
bad. Jim Jane and I are running a campaign of issues, not insults.
Build the wall.
Equal pay for women's work.
NPR brings you...
The American people don't feel certain.
It is quite a struggle across the board.
I just don't think it's as easy to get by in the world today.
The voices of the country. Listen every day.
Morning Edition and All Things Considered every day on 89.9 WJCT.
Join us as we celebrate a musical legacy that began more than a century ago. Blues Horizon, for the best in classic and modern blues, every Monday night at 11 p.m., only on 89.9 FM.
Welcome back. It's a true hidden gem on the First Coast. The Jacksonville Arboretum and Gardens is a 120-acre urban woodland oasis, and it's full of trails for you to explore and enjoy right in the middle of the city. If you've never been out there, you really owe it to yourself to visit the Arboretum. And this weekend, you can do that. You can support the Arboretum and also enjoy some of the best food and drinks in town. Willis Jones is president and board chair with the Jacksonville Arboretum, and he's here with a preview of the third annual Arboretum Wine and Food Fest. Good morning to you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
It's so good to see you. This is going to be wine in the woods, beer in the brush, an incredible afternoon, probably with gorgeous fall weather at this beautiful place. I have to tell you, I think the Arboretum is just an amazing, magical place. It's right in the middle of the city. It's sort of in between Merrill and Monument Roads. That's out correct. There on Milko Road. For people that have never been out there, I think they're probably amazed the first time they walk onto the property.
I believe they are. I mean, I've never sent anyone out that didn't just come back with a great impression. I like to think of it as the Central Park of Arlington.
Exactly.
It's kind of right in the middle of all the urban spread, and it's 120 acres of trails, streams, bridges, boardwalks, and just beautiful, beautiful scenery.
How was the Arboretum created and preserved? Because, of course, that's a really prime piece of real estate that I'm sure could have easily been developed for residential or commercial use.
Well, it's got an interesting history. Back in the 40s and 50s, there was a company called Humphreys, and Humphreys was a mining company that mined for minerals for titanium. And all along the property north of the Arboretum, down Southside Boulevard and all the way to J. Turner Butler, was strip mined. And in those days, the strip mining operation was not very environmentally sensitive. So what it left was nothing but just basically sand, white sand, and a few patches of vegetation. I grew up off Southside Boulevard, and we just had to walk right across the street, and we had just a giant desert over there. And I never knew exactly why, but
get
now
out
we
of
know.
Here.
So, you know, the Arboretum is a testament to the fact that if you leave nature alone long enough, it repairs itself. So it it has come back, and as I said, we have about 13 different ecosystems that are present on the property, 120 acres of trees, and we are kind of moving toward a botanical garden setting at this point.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, like anything else, it requires money. I mean, we have a curator who is the curator and head groundskeeper from the University of North Florida, who is working on our plant collections and starting to work on gardens. So it's going to take a while, but that's our direction, and that's the way we're moving toward actually doing. I don't know if there's another botanical garden in Jacksonville at this point, so that's
pretty
what we'd
exciting.
like to see.
Another draw, and I think when people go out to the Arboretum, they might be surprised just how big it truly is. It's bigger than you would imagine to be in that urban area.
It spans really the distance between Monument and Merrill Road, so as we said before, it's over 120 acres. We have probably about two-thirds of it under development now, and some of it is still not developed at this point.
Okay, so with all of that said, if you've never been to the Arboretum, or even if you're a regular visitor, you really owe it to yourself to come out this Saturday for the Arboretum Wine and Food Fest. This is Saturday from 3 to 6 p.m. Some of Jacksonville's most loved eateries will be serving up absolutely delicious treats. Willis, tell us all about this.
Well, the Arboretum was designed really to, I guess, get people a little bit more exposure to the Arboretum. In my daytime job, I'm the Director of Operations for Southern Glazer Wine and Spirits. And at this point in my career, I get to work with all the major charities. And it's a great job because I get to spend a lot of time making money for nonprofits. So when I got involved with the Arboretum, they asked me to develop this, and they originally wanted it to be a member benefit, and we do some things for our members anyway, but I don't like to engage in charity activities where we don't like to make good money for the charity, so I decided to do it as a public event. So I created this thing in 2014, and we have gotten amazing traction over the last couple of years. It's done lakeside, under tents, and we wait until October specifically because the weather just gets really, really good. And I hear that the weather this Saturday is supposed to be in the mid-70s, beautiful skies, and I think it's going to be a great event.
Oh, it couldn't be better. People will be able to walk around that beautiful lake, have some wine, some beer, food from everyone, ranging from biscottis to Orsay, Havana Jacks, Indochine, River City Brewing Company, Taco Lou, Bold City Brewery, Intuition Ale Works. Carrie Speckman's sitting here. She might want to come out just for that stuff alone. And more. Oh, and live entertainment, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Still time to purchase tickets at jacksonvillearboretum.org.
Right. Yes. Tickets are $55 per person, $100 for a couple, and Arboretum members, of course, get to take a slight discount. But, we still have tickets available, and we'd love for everybody to be there.
Well, it's going to be a beautiful weekend, and thanks so much for giving us this preview. He's Willis Jones, Board Chairman and President of the Jacksonville Arboretum. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Again, that's the third annual Arboretum Wine and Food Fest this Saturday afternoon at the Jacksonville Arboretum and Gardens at 1445 Milco Road. A look at some more weekend events right after this.
Spend some time in the square, an online venue for local artists. WJCT invites you to vote for your favorite submission. Vote now through the end of the month. To learn more about the square and to place your vote, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Hi, I'm John Braun. I'm an emergency planner for the city of Jacksonville, Florida. Individuals with special needs should register annually for assistance with evacuation to shelters. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
Classical music is available 22 hours a day on WJCT 89.9 FM HD2. Find out how you can listen to classical music by calling 358-6390. Enjoy classical music day or night on 89.9 HD2.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour from the Southern Women's Show to the Ritz Chamber Players and more. Lots of options for your beautiful fall weekend. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, Jacksonville's own Carrie Speckman.
Yay!
Here today.
Well, she might not have gotten here today. I don't know what is going on with traffic. It took me 25 minutes to get here from Riverside.
Don't they know who you are?
And all the side streets are like backed up.
Oh no!
I outsmarted them then. I went to Beaver Street.
You know every little back road in
Riverside.
Yeah, but
Riverside, so does everybody
sure.
else. I went down one, and anyway, it's a nightmare.
That's
Beaver
too
Street
bad.
To my friends, if you're trying to get out, that's the way to go.
Well, you made it.
I did.
Now, we just heard about the Arboretum event Saturday. Doesn't that sound beautiful?
It does. And I've never been there either. Maybe we should plan a field trip.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Neither has our friend Dennis, who's sitting here.
That's right. Dennis Chan of Blue Bamboo came along to sit with you today. He's a good friend of you and the show.
One
and
of my WJCT favorite people in the world.
And one of the best people in the world.
Just like you.
Oh, well, thank you. Now, let's talk quickly about the fact that whatever you're doing this weekend, First Coast, Carrie says the Hart Bridge is going to be closed starting at 7 o'clock Friday night through Sunday morning. Are they doing some repairs?
I'm not sure. If you go to the COJ, City of Jacksonville website, the sheriff's office has a whole explanation. I mean, it's going to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
Because there's a Jags game at 1. Oh, that's on Sunday. But there's all kinds of events going on. It's going to be... Quite
right. There
hairy.
There are events at the Symphony, the Times Union mm-hmm. Center.
Avoid the Hart Bridge,
yeah,
basically.
Avoid the Hart Bridge this Sunday, Friday through Sunday, rather. And if you're going to the Prime Osborne Convention Center for the Southern Women's Show, which actually kicks
what
off
a nice
today,
segue.
You might want to not take the Hart Bridge beginning tomorrow.
Yes, that is correct. Now that we're speaking of the Southern Women's Show, it does start today. They will have hundreds of vendors, jewelry, makeup, fashion show. Of course, the firefighter fashion show, which is a big draw. Dennis Chan of Blue Bamboo will be doing some cooking demos.
That's hip Asian comfort food from Blue Bamboo.
It is. And the special guests are Keegan Allen from Pretty Little Liars. He will be on Sunday. And Robbie Hayes from The Bachelorette on Sunday. Saturday.
Is that your announcer voice?
With my clogged up nose.
Okay.
I sound weird.
Right. Well, now, do you have, wait a minute. Let me look at this.
Wait a
Let
minute.
Me read this accurately. Do you have tickets to give away to the Southern Women's Show?
I do. I have two pairs of tickets.
Oh, really?
I do. So however you want to figure that out.
We're going to do this randomly. We will pick two winners at random. Email us now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org if you want a pair of tickets to this weekend's Southern Women's Show. Thanks to The Spectator.
Thanks to Liz Morgan PR.
Oh, okay.
The excitement is palpable in the room.
It's so exciting.
It's actually a really cool show.
It is. It's a fun show.
I had fun at the wig booth.
Okay, and the emails are already rolling in. So we will pick two winners at random. I won't pick the winners. Producer Kevin Mershart will pick the winners at random.
All right.
Just so you know, it's a very fair process.
All right.
Also today, the Ritz Chamber Players opening concert kicks off their
15th season.
You know,
we didn't even plan that.
The Ritz Chamber Players are another hidden gem in this
They are. They
community.
Totally are.
They are absolutely phenomenal.
Yes.
This is their opening concert at the Hendrix Avenue Baptist Church,
yes.
And it is
free
admission.
They do have reserve seats for 15, but it is free.
Okay.
So support them.
That's tonight.
Awesome. Yes.
Okay. At the Florida Theater tonight, Celtic Thunder.
Yes, and it's their legacy tour. They will be celebrating the influence of Irish and Celtic music around the world. What? That's what it says.
That's the way you read it.
Basically, they're five hot Irish guys, and they sing.
And they sing and dance.
I don't think they dance.
No dancing?
I don't think. No, it's not like the
It's not. It's,
river
there's
dance.
No Lord
it's
River. Not, there's no river dance action
no,
at this
they're
show.
Just. Stand there and sing great. And
but they
Irish
sing beautifully.
Guys.
And
yes,
so that's tonight at the Florida Theater. Meanwhile, Friday, it's Jacksonville Sun's family movie night on
Here's
the field.
What's
this
interesting.
Is fun.
Yeah, they do face painting, balloon twisting, and you can like go on the field and watch the movie, which is kind of cool because how often do you get on the field? But they don't say what the movie is.
Oh, you have to show up to find out.
I don't know if that's how it works or they announce it, but I don't. I have no information on that.
All right. Well, that movie starts at 7 Friday.
Bring your own chairs if you'd like.
Yeah. And this is basically, you can get in free if you bring like a can of food.
That is correct. Non-perishable.
Yeah.
I guess all cans are non-perishable.
Pretty much.
Well, no, that's not true. I've found quite a few in my
In your kitchen, in your pantry?
Yes.
What's in the Spectator's pantry? I ask?
Actually, right now, cat food, ramen noodles. And some tea bags.
And some beer, right? No.
Actually, I don't have any beer in my refrigerator.
Let's move on. It's Friday through Sunday, the Bachtoberfest with the Jacksonville Symphony.
Yes.
Get your tickets at jacksymphony.org. Also Saturday,
comedian and actor and producer and director Martin Lawrence coming to town.
Yes, he has not been gone on tour for 4 years. He, as you may know, from Def Comedy Jam, Big Mama's House. And fun fact, he's been banned from Saturday Night Live for life.
Why?
Because he said some really, really raunchy things in his opening dialogue. I saw it when it was on. It's been cut
it
from every rerun.
It is a live show.
But it's like, whoa, that is, yeah.
I think it would probably take a lot to get a lifetime ban from Saturday Night Live.
He said a lot of things.
Oh, if you're a fan, though, you can go see him Saturday at the TU Center.
Yes.
Okay, now let's talk for a minute about St. Augustine Strong. This is really cool. This whole idea of standing strong in the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew.
Yes.
This is going to be at the Castillo de San Marcos.
And I think the event was planned maybe earlier and it didn't happen, but now they're like devoting it. It's called Castillo by Candlelight St. Augustine Strong. So you can go. It's free. They'll have a candlelight evening of the oldest city. They'll reenact things like I guess they do every day, but it will be basically showing support for the city.
Very nice. Yeah, that's Saturday night at the Castillo. And then Sunday, of course, you mentioned the Jaguars play Oakland at home, 1 o'clock Sunday.
That is correct.
All right. Go to thespectator.com for all of your weekend events. And go see
all of them.
Go see Carrie and Blue Bamboo at the Southern Women's Show.
Yes. I got a preview yesterday.
Oh, we're already getting lots of tickets, meanwhile.
Oh, wow. We're
going to pick
two winners at random. I might just have an extra pair.
Three pairs.
In my bag of tricks.
Well, we have a lot of emails coming in, so they will definitely be snapped up. Go to thespectator.com for more weekend events. And thanks for listening. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Diane Reams up next with a look at the third and final presidential debate that aired last night. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.